Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast spotlighting some of the area's most interesting and accomplished women. When Atira Griffin was working at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, it broke her heart to hear about the challenging relationships between many of the students and their single moms. That, along with her strong relationship with her mother, inspired Atira to start Bond in 2015. Bond, or Building Our Nation's Daughters, is a local nonprofit that aims to strengthen the relationships between single mothers and daughters, and in turn, strengthen our communities. For her work with Bond, Atira won the Warnock Foundation's Baltimore Social Innovation Award in 2015. I talked to Atira about growing up in Baltimore, experiencing disparities in education, and empowering Baltimore's women. Here's our conversation. Where are you from originally?
I am born and raised in Baltimore, as we say, Baltimore bred, Baltimore made.
Yes. What part of the city?
I've lived in just about every part of Baltimore City. We moved around quite a bit when I was young. So West Baltimore, Northeast Baltimore, Southeast Baltimore. The part I haven't lived in the most was Southwest. So I just claim my city totally.
What was your experience of moving around a lot as a child like?
It was very interesting. I definitely have a great grasp of the differences between the neighborhoods and the sides of Baltimore. West Baltimore absolutely experiences, in my opinion, a lot more poverty, more abandoned houses. However, there are more trees and more grassy areas in parts of West Baltimore. East Baltimore, a bit more affluent, a bit more of the money has definitely flown to that area or been diverted to that area. But honestly, I've loved each side equally. So I tend to flip back and forth between East and West Baltimore, but I do see a lot of the need in West Baltimore.
And were you changing schools a lot as a kid?
Yes. I attended Leithwalk Elementary School, Chicopin Middle School, Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, BPI. And also for college, I stayed in Baltimore, so Morgan State University and Johns Hopkins University.
I think I've had a poly, I can't remember if I've had a poly or city grad on or more than one, but yeah, there, it's always like the represent thing.
You
there's
must
a lot
represent.
Of poly and city pride in this city for sure.
Absolutely. You cannot attend either one of those schools and not have a certain amount of pride, and it goes on and well into your 50s and 60s. It never goes away.
Did you ever want to leave Baltimore?
Yes. At one point, I was making a transition from working in education and just really trying to figure out where I fit in the big scheme of things in society. And I thought about moving to Atlanta. I thought about moving to Boston. But lo and behold, God have it be that I stay in Baltimore. And I'm actually quite glad that I did stay. This is a really pivotal time in our city's history. We are coming up against a lot of different things in our community that we need to advocate for as far as education. And when you think about the minimum wage activity and the immigration issues that we're facing here in our city, it's just really a pivotal time to be in Baltimore, but also a great time to be a leader in Baltimore.
What attracted you about cities like Atlanta and Boston, or what pulled you away?
So Atlanta, I've never been there. Two, it's supposed to be the hub of, you know, African-American progress down there. So a lot of different opportunities arise for African-Americans in Atlanta. And I just wanted to experience a different city with the thought of bringing back my experiences to Baltimore. Boston, I just love the culture. It's a lot of creativity and artistics up there. And I wanted to kind of get a feel for that city. But ultimately, my city held on to me. So, I mean, Baltimore has a certain amount of charm. You cannot come here and not want to live here forever if you truly get to know Baltimore as a city. That's one thing that is always true about us. If you stay here for a few years, and I have college friends that have been here since they were in college and they have not left yet, because Baltimore holds on to you. We have a certain amount of charm and this homey feeling that just makes you want to stay and get involved.
That's a real barometer for like a type of person. When I'm not from here, but when I fell in love with it instantly. And when I hear people who dismiss Baltimore or don't like it, I'm like, what kind of person are you? Like, who doesn't love this city? I mean, I can understand why certain people who are born and raised in Baltimore, of course, would have issues with it and want to leave. But as far as like the haters out there of Baltimore, I just don't get it.
And that's what they are, haters. You have to get to know a city and really entrench yourself in what is happening, what is going on, and the people. There are so many different types of people in Baltimore. We are definitely a city of neighborhoods. You can walk around one block and you have this new different type of culture from block to block, and it just draws you in, and you cannot help but to love this city, especially thinking about our history and, you know, how far we've come from issues of segregation and thinking about issues of education in Baltimore. We've really come a long way, and we have a long way to go, but it's just a great city to live in when you really get to know it.
When you were younger and growing up in Baltimore, were you aware of a lot of the issues that were facing Baltimore? And were you kind of aware of this, like you say, city of neighborhoods and that kind of city pride also?
Absolutely. When I was attending Poly, we had an issue with the air conditioning and some of our books were very old. And most would think, okay, it's Poly. Poly has all the money in the world, right? Not true, especially when I was attending Poly. So we didn't have the bulk of the city budget coming to our school at that point in time. Even though we had a high enrollment rate and great SAT scores, we were expected to raise more money from our alumni base. And to think that students who work hard, come to school every day, are getting a great education and pushing forward, cannot come to a school that has air conditioning in all the classrooms or a school that has books that are up to date, it really bothered me as a young person in Baltimore. So myself and some of the students in my class, we organized and we started a petition and we wrote letters to our mayor and to our city council representative at that time to say, okay, look, we need support at this school. We do great things. You all love to brag on Poly, but we need some more of that city money coming our way. So as a young person, I was absolutely aware of it. I would also just have incidences through my childhood where, you know, violence would come into play. Living in West Baltimore, we had an incident one time where a young man who was running from the police ran through our house. What? Who lives like this? But it's crazy because remembering it, my reaction, it wasn't of surprise. It was just more so get out of the way. Mm-hmm. Don't be in the way. Let the police run through and then close the doors. Let's go back to our normal daily life. Eventually, we did move out of that neighborhood. And my mother made it clear that that's not something that we should accept or expect. However, it is something that happens in our city.
Yeah, that's something you hear with a lot of Baltimore kids is mm-hmm. a lot of officials, I guess, speak out on how sad it is that many children here are raised to think certain things are normal.
Right.
That shouldn't be normal.
Right.
Was that your first experience organizing?
My first, I guess you could say, real experience organizing, yes. There was an incident when I was in middle school, and I think this was my first experience of advocacy when I was in middle school. So, long story short, I used to live for a year in Ohio. Random fact.
That is where I lived for 18 years.
Well, look at that.
Yes.
So I lived in this little county called Medina. It was very different from Baltimore when I was in the sixth grade. My mother moved us because we love to experience different opportunities. And my uncle lived in Medina, Ohio. He said the education was awesome up there. And my mother, being concerned about my transition to middle school and my brother's transition to high school, decided to give it a try. So we moved to Medina, Ohio. The middle school education was awesome. Loved it. However, culturally, it was definitely just a tough transition, especially at that point in time in your adolescence and your young adulthood. You have to take on a whole new location and then different cultures. Like, I was used to living in neighborhoods and going to schools that were predominantly African-American. And then I had to transition and now understand, you know, how to live among mostly Caucasian Americans. And that was different for me. My hair became an issue. My skin color became an issue. My vernacular became an issue. It was really interesting. So ultimately, and we can talk more about that if you want, but going back to the point of the story, ultimately, we moved back to Baltimore. And when we moved back to Baltimore, that's when I went to attend Chicopin Middle School. Night and day. I love my people. When I went to Chicopin, now my hair is not an issue, but my clothes are an issue. So for a young woman who, you know, I'm still figuring out who I am, I'm wearing whatever I want to wear at this point in time, and it may not have been the most fashionable. But in Baltimore, if you didn't have a pair of Tims and you didn't have on First Down or North Face at that point in time, then you were not seen as popular. You were not seen as someone most people would want to hang around. So it was a little bit of a harsh culture shock for me to go from elementary up to middle school in Ohio and then to come back down to middle school in Baltimore. At the same time, I also had to deal with a shift in education. And I think this was the first time I really recognized that there is a difference in the way urban students are educated versus suburban students, or all Black and brown populations are educated versus white students. I had no clue. My mind was blown as a young person at that point. When I was in Ohio, I was learning about a lot of historic cultures, and we had food activities where we could make different foods from the Asian culture, from Greek culture, and bring it in and taste it and try it. And I was able to, for the first time, play an instrument in school and figure out if I liked the music from the orchestra. And I was just exposed to so much more when I was in Ohio. And then when I came back to Baltimore, we didn't have music at my middle school. We did have wood shop, and I loved it. But it was less. We had less opportunities for exposure. And because my classes were so different, when I came back to Baltimore, they placed me in a class. This is when student tracking still existed. They placed me in a class that was on the lower level. And I say lower in air quotes because I know people are listening. Yeah. They can't see my hands. And my mother would not have it. So she came into the school. I love my mother. She came into Chicopin and she spoke with the principal and the vice principal and literally made her case as to why I should not be in this quote unquote lower academic class. Students were not listening to the teacher. They were throwing books. I wasn't learning anything, and I was coming home to complain. And so when she came in and made her case and showed my scores, my report card that was in my file that should have been reviewed to the principal and the vice principal, they then moved me to the top class. And it was a totally different atmosphere in the same school. Students were sitting down listening. We engaged in conversation about Lilies of the Valley. Like, what? We were dissecting poetry. We were talking about Shakespeare. We had dissections in science class. Why is that difference there? Why did that exist? And why is it that the students who were in the quote unquote lower academic class, that they were not expected to get a great education? They were not expected to come in and sit down. They were not expected to participate in discussions. They were not expected to do their homework. That is the first time I think I realized that there was a difference in the level of education you might receive, depending upon who you were and how your parents stood up for you. And also based on color.
I guess it's sadly not surprising that your mom had to be such a big advocate for you. And yeah. I would guess that a lot of people, you know, don't have parents who are paying as much attention as your mom was. So in what way did she influence your education beyond that?
My mother always instilled in me that education is key. Education opens other doors and opportunities. And you are going to college. It is not a question. This not only came from my mother, it also came from my grandmother. So my grandmother, love her. She's like, I'm her mini me, I guess you could say. But she was, you know, really stern, loving and sweet, but always made her point very clearly. And one point that she made is that each generation must do better than the one before it. My grandmother was able to receive her associate's degree, which was a bit unheard of at that time when she was growing up. And she was also a single mom during portions of that period of time. She received her associate's degree. She went on to work with the Housing Authority of Baltimore City, became a department manager over there, really made good for herself. Pushed my mother to, regardless of life situations, pursue her bachelor's. So parallel stories, my mother received her bachelor's degree the same year I graduated from high school. What an example, you know, to see my mom overcome so much, because she had to raise two children on her own in Baltimore City and still make ends meet, you know, go to class, still make sure that her papers were correct and understand her math. There were times when I had to help my mother with her math because the levels change as you progress through education. So the math that she was learning in college was actually my high school math. But to see her cross that stage the same year I had to cross the high school stage made it imperative for me to then take the next step. So not only did I have to attain my bachelor's degree, I also had to make sure that I obtained my master's degree. And thank God it is something that I'm able to say I achieved, but it's really only because of that thought of how important education is to especially a young woman growing up in Baltimore City in order to not only make a way for yourself, but your family. So everything that we do as women in my family, it is for the family, whether that be immediate or extended. It's always about the community.
That's obviously such a wonderful and important lesson in hindsight. I wonder if when you were young, did it ever feel like, oh my God, like what if I don't want to get a master's? Or did that ever feel like an extra level of pressure on you?
I really feel like the pressure came from myself more than my mother and my grandmother. I've always struggled with perfectionism. You know, I want to do everything right. And I want to do everything a certain way. I think their values made sense to me. It wasn't extra pressure. It made sense. This must be done. Even in hindsight, thinking about how I perceived myself, a lot of it came from what I was told. Even just growing up being a young woman, a little girl, you know, I participate in reading contests. I used to participate in like a Billie Holiday contest that was in Baltimore. I had dance class. I had after school classes, all of these activities. And then along the way, my mother ensured that I had connections with certain teachers who just really spoke highly of me and spoke highly over me. So a lot of affirmations growing up, not just from my family, but from my community. So where others may say that may seem like a lot of pressure, it was a necessity. I had no choice to be anyone else, you know, especially when others can see so much within you. I think that my mom would definitely say that she had to pull me back sometimes. If I got a B in a class and, you know, I was unhappy because I wanted an A, she would have to sit me down, especially in elementary and middle school, and talk to me about how it's okay sometimes to we shoot for the stars and we may just hit the moon. And that is great as well. So it was a little bit the opposite, honestly.
What inspired you to get into education yourself?
So it was not a thought originally for me to actually be involved in education. My mom was a second grade teacher at Tench Tillman, and she also taught at Collington Square at one point. And I always admired her for that. I used to say, oh, mom, you're so good for this. You're so great for teaching these little people. And I would never do anything like that. Lo and behold. So I went through and I got my bachelor's in engineering and I practiced engineering for about a year and a half. I didn't have enough of a connection to people. I didn't even realize that I'm really a people person. I love people. I love talking to people, helping them, cultivating their gifts and talents and pushing them to pursue their purpose. So that wasn't being fulfilled when I was working in engineering, and I decided to take a step back and just figure out what it was I was supposed to do with my life. In the meantime, I was actually helping one of my sorority sisters teach STEP at Baltimore Leadership School for young women when it first started, when it was on the top floor of Western.
Yes, I was just reading our former reporter Erica Green's story about the first graduating class and how it was on top of Western and everything.
Yes, so that first graduating class were my eighth grade babies, the first class I taught at Bliss. Special girls, love them so much. They taught me so much about what it is to be, you know, a woman of integrity and to how to hold young women to a higher standard and push them to make sure that they achieve their dreams. And they are out there doing great things already, and I'm so proud of them. So when I was teaching STEP with my sorority sister, the principal at the time, she came to both of us and asked us if we were interested in teaching. So at this point in time, I'm really open to a lot of opportunities. And I truly believe education is power. Education is key to the success of an individual. We have to have some basis of learning in our life that continues in order to truly progress and create this opportunity for progress in our communities. So I decided to give it a try. I actually applied for BCTR first, and I got in. Fine, but I will tell you one thing, that Praxis 2 for mathematics, and any of the teachers out there who may be listening will attest to this, it is so difficult. So unfortunately, even with all of my lovely brain, was not able to pass that praxis to the first time around. But I was given an opportunity to teach at a Mount Pleasant Christian School. And I tell you the truth, teaching there, I fell in love with teaching. And just innately good at it, like connecting with young people. I taught 7th and 8th grade math, science, and Bible. Connecting with young people, just being able to pour into them affirmations, positivity, and also correction when needed, but out of love. It's such an opportunity to pour out so much of yourself. And then also sometimes you have to be careful because it can really take all of you to truly teach a young person and to help them thrive and grow. But it was just an experience that affected my life so much that I knew this was something that I was called to do, something that I loved. So after that, the principal of Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, who I had originally been in contact with via teaching STEP after school sometimes with my sorority sister, she contacted me again and said, hey, you know, do you think you would want to teach math to our girls? Would you like to reapply? Absolutely. And I actually went through an alternative program, Teach for America, in order to teach in my own community, which is not something most people do.
No, don't. Yeah, don't Teach for America. People usually just get shipped off across the country.
Normally they do. However, Baltimore was one of the highest areas of need. And I also was signing up to teach math. No one wants to teach math. I love math. That's my thing. But it's a high need subject. It's a subject that many people will not sign up to teach because you have to have a serious foundation and understanding not only how to calculate, but how to teach it. So how do you take it and chew it up and then give it to others and in the doses or in the morsels that they actually need to consume it in? So because it was a high need area and a high need subject, I got my top choice. And I knew I would. it's no way.
You're like, I just got to jump through this extra hoop and I'll get that job.
Exactly. So I started teaching at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women in 2011. And these girls were just amazing. The school was amazing. And the thought of cultivating this empowerment of young women in Baltimore, it just spoke to who I am as a person. I've always been a women's proponent. Like, I've always focused on women's issues, even through college. It's always been about, let's make sure our young women have what they need. Let's make sure women are focused and grounded and have a solid foundation. Because if we do that, we can shore up families. We can shore up communities. Because women tend to be, no shade, men, women tend to be the bedrock of our communities. And, you know, statistically, 65% of the single 65% of families in Baltimore are single parent families. 80% of that 65 are single mother households. So that's a huge amount of the population just here in Baltimore when you think about it. So having that opportunity at Bliss, it really shaped and molded my thoughts and the way that I interacted with my community. And it just grew even deeper my love for education and young women.
Well, that kind of brings us nicely to building our nation's daughters, I guess. Tell me where the initial idea came from.
Two places in general. So first, the idea came from my own experience. My mother is a huge impact in my life. She had a huge impact on, you know, how I grew up and shaped my own personality. Also, just knowing that she was a single mother through everything that she was trying to instill in me and my brother, it always made me point at her strength. And her strength is hidden. She's, you know, cupcakes and butterflies. My mother and I are definitely two different people. We always say we have two totally different personalities. And I love how she allowed me growing up to develop that personality, how she never tried to make me be like her or like what she wanted me to be. It was more so just guiding me along the way. And at one point, she got a little bit of criticism for her parenting style because she allowed her children to make choices, to advocate also for changes in the household, and to have an input in decisions. And most people at that time would say, you know, a child stays in a child's place, but we were a part of her circle. And that relationship that we had slash have, me and my mother's relationship is out of this world. We're like besties. It's ridiculous. We did not start that way. She is still my mother. But, you know, growing into an adult and seeing how it's been able to kind of change over time and evolve into this really great friendship came from what she instilled in me and worked on communication-wise and relationship-wise with me as a young woman. So I've always felt like everyone should have this type of relationship with their mother or their maternal figure. Then also my experience at Bliss as Dean of Students. This experience shaped my life in so many ways. So stepping out of the classroom to serve as Dean of Students for about 2 years at Bliss, I was able to see the sweet and the sour of being a young woman growing up in Baltimore City at this day and age, during this time. And one thing that I always heard these young women say, whether they were coming in my office crying or happy, I wish I could talk to my mother like this. No, I wish I had this kind of relationship with my mom. Or I would ask questions like, well, have you talked to your mom about this issue or about this situation or about this decision? No, she's not going to listen to me. Or no, she's too busy. Or I don't really talk to my mother like that. That bothered me. It's not right. I am not taking the place of anyone's mother or maternal figure, because that's an important role to play. I believe in role models. I believe in mentoring. However, I also believe that a parent ultimately has the most important role in a child's life. And it made me think over time, how can I help? What can I do? And I started reaching out to some of the moms, especially when they had to pass through my office to have conversations about student activity or student behavior. And sometimes the mothers would even say, can you help me? I just don't understand her. I'm not the same as she is right now. I did not grow up the way she's growing up. I need help communicating. I need help figuring out what to do with her. And that's heartbreaking. I'm not a mother. I don't have any children. So that was really heartbreaking to sit across the table from a mother and hear her say she doesn't understand her own daughter. At the same time, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to step in. Being an educator, you wear so many hats. Granted, I am not a mother. I do not have any children, but you mother on children as an educator, especially as a woman. You mother children when you are in this role. You act sometimes as a parent in the school walls. And I think because we spend so much time with the students, we get an insight into a student's mindset, a student's behavior, the way that they behave outside of their parents' purview. That helps give parents some insight into who their child actually is and who they're growing to be. So having these questions come my way, I really started to think and ponder, what can I do to help? You know, I'm given this burden for a reason, not just to sit on it. What can I do to help? So I started to do some research, and I found that there were some programs that did like academic support for mothers and daughters in Baltimore. Actually, not in Baltimore. These were in other states. So in Texas and in Arizona, there were two programs that existed. It was a mother-daughter project, and they would work with mothers and daughters through high school to help them communicate, but also to help them talk about academics and go through different STEM activities together. So it wasn't really focused on the relationship. It was focused on academics and getting them into college and possibly getting mom to pursue higher education at the same time. Nothing existed in Baltimore. I was really surprised. Nothing, especially for single mothers, which was the bulk of who I served at the Baltimore Leadership School, that came to me with these types of questions. So, lo and behold, I said, okay, well, if nothing exists, we need to make something. We need to figure out a way to pull these mothers and daughters together. What kind of programming, what curriculum, what activities would benefit them the most? What kind of supports do they really need? So that's how Bond was born.
What does Bond end up looking like? What kinds of programming is there, and what do the mothers and daughters do?
I love this question. So Bond is still evolving, which is something that I'm extremely excited about, because that means that it's actually still meeting the needs of its demographic. It's meeting the needs of the mothers and daughters wherever they are. So when we started out, the first thing I did was actually have a mother-daughter brunch. Brought mothers and daughters together on a Saturday afternoon, and we talked. We listened. I listened. They talked, really. Asking questions like, you know, what kind of programs would you like to see in Baltimore for mothers and daughters? What's one of the biggest challenges you face in having a good relationship with your daughter or your mother? How would you like to be supported in building a good relationship or helping to raise your daughter, especially as a single mom? So listening to the answers to these questions, we developed activities and we developed a schedule for folks to come in. We even picked a day of the week that made sense most for single moms to come out, which happened to be Thursday. Thursday evening, Saturday midday. Those were the days we were given. But ultimately, the thing that we were asked to do most was provide a space where mothers and daughters could come that had food, because they were not going to come out for a certain amount of hours without food. Also to support in transportation, so to make sure that it was accessible via public transportation, but to have activities that they would not normally schedule for themselves, which I thought was very smart and open to ask for something that they would not normally pick. So we came up with certain activities like a paint night that we did with mothers and daughters. And it was really interesting to see how they interacted through this activity. So it was called Painting with a Twist. And this was one of our first activities that we did. And the mothers and daughters would start painting on their own canvas after they had a lesson about the meaning of colors, shapes, and lines, and how it communicated emotion. And they were asked to paint what they thought would represent their relationship with their mom or their daughter. Now, halfway through, they were told they had to switch canvases. You immediately laugh because I know you can envision what happens when a mom and a daughter switch canvases that they've been working so diligently on and see as their own. So you start to come in contact with the issues of control, the issues of communication, self-esteem issues, opinions, whether or not a daughter feels that she's heard. So she doesn't want her mother to take her canvas because you're just going to change everything. That's all you ever do. So it started this conversation that I think they did not know they were going to have that day. We finished the canvases and then come back for reflection and then talk about what that experience brought out in them that they realized they may need to address in their mother-daughter relationship. And so if it was communication, we split off into a communication group. If it was choice, we split off into a choice group. If it was past hurts, we split into a group with a counselor that would be able to deal with some of the hurt that may have come from experiences in the relationship through their childhood and, you know, for the mom, maybe even when she was a child. So we always come under the guise of some kind of great, it's going to be fun activity. And it is, but it's also going to help get to the root of what's going on in your relationship at that time.
You kind of touched on this with the providing food and mm-hmm. making sure it's accessible by public transportation. But I'm wondering, of course, so many contributing factors to single moms having challenges and challenging relationships with their daughters is, of course, external factors, you know, just being overworked, money being tight, whatever it may be. So is it frustrating or challenging to kind of address these issues in an interpersonal way rather than big picture?
It can be. It definitely can be challenging. A lot of the moms have to overcome these challenges in order to make it to the programming. So one thing that we try to do is to provide, you know, opportunities for transportation. And that's why we also provide food every time. But no matter what you do, it has to be some type of motivating factor within either the mother or the daughter to get there. And you have to keep pushing. That I think this is true with any nonprofit, honestly. Any organization that does public service to a certain extent, you're going to come in, you're going to start to hit a wall where you wonder if you need to change your approach or if you need to change your tactics because who you're serving may not be able to make it or are not showing up in the way that you would like. What I found is consistency matters most. So if they know bond programming happens every month, they know bond programming happens every month. If they know we have a basket drive every single year for Thanksgiving, they know that support exists and it's there to take advantage of. You have to be consistent. And over time, they will become consistent, plain and simple.
So you just have to be there ready for them when they're ready.
Yep. Because it's not always about numbers, you know. It's for me, it's not about numbers. It's about the service and the quality. It's about making sure that whoever does come gets what they need out of the activity or out of the event or the service that we're providing at that point in time. And to be quite honest, we would love to be put out of a job. That is the real goal. Like, we do not want to have to exist for 40, 50 years, because that means that relationships are not really mending, especially if you think that we're local. We're in Baltimore, right? So if that's the case, then are we really meeting our goals? Are we really achieving our mission if we have to exist for that long in order to mend all of these relationships or help cultivate positive relationships in Baltimore? Now, if what we do in our service changes, then great. But if it's the same thing that we're providing and we keep coming in contact with the same types of issues and relationships, then we may not be, you know, actually meeting our mission. But that's all. It's always going to be kind of like this tension between providing the service that you know is needed at that point in time and changing a route dependent upon who you're seeing and what you're seeing as your turnout for an organization.
Beyond the immediate relationship between a daughter and a mother, what kinds of spillover effects do you see, you know, in Baltimore, in these daughters or mothers' lives, you know, as the result of strengthening this relationship?
Absolutely. So some of the spillover effects that I've even just witnessed are between sisters, which I love. So you may have, you know, sisters in the same household, or they may have a sister in another household, a half sister somewhere, or a sister by their father that they see intermittently. And understanding who they are and how they like to be communicated with, or what activities they like to do, and how to actually build a good relationship because of what they've been doing with their mother, can spill over to their relationship with their sister, which inherently spills out to the whole family after a while, because what we're talking about is healing, right? We're talking about healing. We're talking about self-awareness. We're talking about proper communication. And that makes a person whole. And so when a person is whole, they will be able to then interact with others and help them become whole at the same time. So we don't have a whole bunch of hurt people hurting people around Baltimore. We have some whole people helping others to heal. When it comes to moms, that is just an exponential effect. So moms will carry, and we as women, we multiply things, right? Whatever we get, we're going to spread it back out in a larger way. So moms will carry it to their sons. It's different the way they need to relate to them, but they'll be able to pay attention more and try to work with understanding the communication style of their young man more if they have a son. And then when you think about going to work, okay, so we're talking about now coworker relationships and how do I show up as a woman at work? We do talk about this. And how can I make sure that I'm affecting positivity in that community as well? So now we're touching not only our own families, but families at work, families and communities, my next door neighbor. I may hear them arguing next door, but I have a tactic. I have a skill that I've learned on how to do conflict resolution. So I can spread that to the family next door. So now we have blocks becoming whole. So, and these are just stories that I've actually been able to gather from some of the participants saying, you know, oh, I used that when I went to church the other day, or when I saw my neighbor out in the street arguing, I actually stepped in and I told them about this tactic, or I did some active listening and I helped them to use proper language when talking to one another, or I statements. And it's like, oh my goodness, it's working. So it can spread exponentially. And that's the hope, is that this ability to work on proper relationships will spread across the city. Because when you think about it, families are the crux of our communities. And so if we can heal families, we can heal communities, and we can heal our city. That's the goal.
What's next for Bond?
We have a couple things coming up that I'm really excited for. The first thing is in September, we are having a Generation We Summit, which is women's empowerment. So we're going to pull together generations of women across Baltimore, grandmom, mom, daughter, and have them go through certain activities during the day that will promote reflection, connection, and then also experience a little bit of health and fitness during that day as well. We need to be whole, mind, body, and soul. So I'm really excited about this summit. We've done something similar at Bliss, where we had a junior class retreat and we brought mothers and daughters in, and they were able to experience Pilates and yoga, and they made routines with one another. They also met with a college counselor who was awesome at Bliss, and she went over that college piece with them because they were juniors, so going into their senior year. And then we had some activities, one in particular that I'll talk about real quick, called Through the Looking Glass. And they always get angry at me about this activity because it is a tearjerker, but in a good way. So it's basically like a fishbowl, and mothers start off in the middle of the circle, and they pull out questions from a bowl that may be like, you know, what are your hopes for your daughter? What's your biggest fear in life? Do you feel like you've prepared your daughter for the world? What are you going to do when your daughter leaves? What's one regret that you have? Questions that really dig into who mom is and what she's thinking. And daughters on the outside cannot say a word. They have to listen. So this helps them to hear one another. And then they switch. And what normally happens during this activity is, I never knew you thought. Or daughters may say something like, I hope my mom pursues this dream because I'm okay. And I want her to do what she needs to do for her life. So it's an interesting exchange that happens. It always ends up in tears, but good tears, and a lot of healing takes place during that activity. So if anybody out there is interested in, you know, experiencing some health and wellness and some health and fitness activities, but also digging deeper and doing some reflection and really connecting with your mother or your daughter or your granddaughter, come out to the Generation We Summit. We'll be putting out advertisement for it soon. We do have a website that you can visit. It's www.MBOND.org, and all of our activities and events are up on there. And we're also taking membership at this time. So if you would like to sign up for the monthly membership, because we have two different tracks, you can attend monthly events or you can come to our quarterly events. But if you would like to sign up for the monthly membership, you can do that on our website as well. And we would love to see you come out.
So for all the criers out there, go sign up. Atira, thanks so much for coming in today.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being able to just come and chat with you about what Bond is doing and also just Baltimore in general.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Atira Griffin. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast. You can find Female Trouble everywhere you listen to podcasts, like iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can also stay up to date on Twitter at FMLTrouble and at BaltimoreSun.com/FemaleTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and see you next time.